Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hi, everyone. I'm here today, and you can probably hear me smiling through the microphone because I'm about to make a very exciting announcement. The last few weeks, you've been hearing me talk about other podcasts that we're fans of here at Wrongful Conviction. And anyone who knows me knows that probably my favorite podcast that wasn't a lava podcast was Murder in Oregon. I told everybody for years, ever since I first heard it, you got to listen to this thing. I binged it. It's nutty. It's incredible reporting. It's an unbelievable story. And the woman behind it is the one and only Lauren Bright Pacheco. And it's been my privilege over the last several years to get to know her and work with her. So today, why I'm so excited is because I'm here to announce that Lauren is going to be hosting Wrongful Conviction with Lauren Bright Pacheco. So here we go. Get ready for some stories coming to your car radio, your earphones, earbuds, whatever those things are called, your workout. Get ready. It's going to be amazing. And in case you were wondering, I'm sitting here right now in the fabulous Red Room at iHeart Studios with the fabulous Lauren Bright Pacheco. Lauren, what's up?
That was quite an introduction. Thank you, sir. I am so excited for this season, and I am so sincerely honored to be joining the Lava team and to be doing my part in sharing these incredible stories.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. I'm sort of giddy. And by the way, that was all one take. That introduction was unscripted. So it's from the heart here at iHeart. And so, you know, there's actually an interesting story of how we first connected, because it was a surprise, and I love surprises.
Well, it kind of makes me sound like a stalker because I had already retired technically from television. I left television. I'm a recovering television producer to start podcasting full time. But I got a call about taking a shoot, and the only reason I agreed to take the shoot was because it was an interview with you. And I had already been such a fan of Wrongful Conviction. And I have to tell you, it was interesting because I had no idea that you were listening to Murder in Oregon when our paths first crossed. But Wrongful Conviction so prepared me for the reporting and the research behind Murder in Oregon, because it really wrapped my head around the systemic issues and corruption and wrongful convictions. So I was already indebted to Wrongful Conviction when we met.
Oh, wow. So I didn't know this part of the story. So you were already listening to Wrongful Conviction episodes before you went and recorded that sort of iconic series, Murder in Oregon?
Oh, yeah. Wow. And then when I met you in person, I started talking to you about wrongful conviction, and then it just, I let it slide that, oh, I kind of podcast too. And when you asked what I was working on, I explained I'd done Happy Face and that currently Murder in Oregon was out. Your whole face lit up and you said you loved the podcast, and I actually wasn't sure you weren't just teasing me. I wasn't sure because your reaction was so sincere. But then that started, and iHeart probably won't want to know this, but you're a very persuasive man. And once you found out that I could get you the episodes a little earlier than the day that they dropped, that's when I started getting texts. Is episode 7 ready yet?
Yeah, right. I remember that now. I had been listening, right? I think I had binged the episodes that were available, but of course couldn't listen to the ones that weren't until I found you, or you found me, or we found each other. And so, yeah, I was that was a nice plus, because everybody knows that feeling of, you know, angst when you're waiting for the next episode of a show you really care about and are vested in. And I was, because even for people like us who are, you know, seasoned veterans of this stuff, you can still be surprised by shows like that.
I continue to be surprised by this particular case, because even though Frank Gable has been exonerated, the state of Oregon is still fighting the even possibility of actually compensating him for 3 decades they stole by wrongfully convicting him. And the murder of Michael Franke remains an unsolved murder.
It's nuts. And it's Oregon. We're not talking about Mississippi, right? Or, you know, Alabama or Arkansas, or states I think most people would, you know, more likely associate with this type of extreme malfeasance. Is probably too kind of a word, but corruption, cover-ups, wrongful persecutions and convictions and scandals that go way up the ladder. I mean, way. It's crazy. Way. It's like if it wasn't true, you couldn't write it, because no one would believe it. Mm-hmm. Because there's a line in fiction that you don't, that writers don't cross, because there's somebody, always an editor, who comes in and says, no one's going to believe that. Scale it back.
You can't unsee it once you see it. And that's the interesting thing, I think, about corruption and misconduct. And when we talk about states that have a rotten track record, Oregon's not even at the top. I would have to say that Illinois continues to blow my mind in terms of, I think the Chicago is paid out at this point well over $600 million to compensate exonerees who were wrongfully convicted. And that's, I think, the heartbreaking aspect of what we do, that even when the facts fully point to someone's innocence, I like to say that when the system decides that you're guilty, you're on a fast track to conviction. But when it gets called out for making mistakes, it reverses like a frozen slug. It is just the most painstakingly arduous process for the system to own up to the mistakes it's made and to reverse a wrongful conviction. Years, decades. And we see that again and again. And it's really what I'm trying to touch upon in the season that you've so generously entrusted me with, is that to get through a wrongful conviction, of course, the lawyers and the Innocence Project are incredibly supportive and helpful in trying to reverse those stuck wheels of justice. But so often there are these individual relationships, you know, these personal heroes to the wrongfully convicted person who show up day after day for the person in any way they can, whether it is correspondence or visiting in person or being their personal champion in terms of trying to get their case on the radar of Innocence Projects. And so I'm really leaning heavily into that emotional connection between the wrongfully convicted person and their support person, their personal hero, the person who is able to turn their anger and their frustration and pain into purpose on behalf of the wrongfully convicted person. And we've told some incredible stories. There is a woman named Michelle Morrison, who is actually the first woman to have been released as a direct result of the Fulton County Conviction Integrity Unit under Fonnie Willis. Her mother has this beautiful story that she shares. She was so blindsided when her daughter was given 55 years to life sentence that she had to be physically carried out of the courtroom. And she was so decimated that she said that for the first few months, tears were her food, and that then she turned her pain into purpose and her purpose into passion. And she's the one who advocated for greater oversight of sentencing in Fulton County and for the Conviction Integrity Unit. And lo and behold, her daughter has benefited directly from having her mother as her champion on the outside, refusing to take no for an answer. The stories are just incredibly inspiring and humbling, but it really shows, I think, the power of empathy to take on the system.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I think that I'm so glad we're highlighting these heroes, and there's always going to be mistakes, but we could, you know, we could certainly cut the percentage of wrongful convictions dramatically just by taking some basic steps to ensure that there's some accountability at various levels of the system, which there isn't.
If you are more concerned in wins for the prosecution than you are in justice, there's a problem. There's a huge issue. And we continue to see that again and again and again, where the objective is not to put a guilty person in prison. It's not rehabilitation. It's to put a body in a cell, because we live, unfortunately, in a prison-for-profit world. And that ripple effect of wrongful convictions is just staggering. And that's going back to compassion and empathy. It is the humanizing of these stories. And that's why I believe that leaning heavily into the emotional connection really has the power to open minds. And I think that with not just wrongful convictions, but many things, if we look at it with empathy, empathy tends to help erase the us and the them. And then it becomes our problem. Wrongful convictions are our problems. Our problem in that they could happen to anybody. And a wonderful example of that is Alan Beeman. And again, out of Illinois, he was arrested right after his final exams, his senior year at university, for the murder of an ex-girlfriend, because his fingerprints were found on the alarm clock in her apartment, along with her current boyfriend and another guy's. But they railroaded this guy. And he spent 13 years in prison, shuffled between six different prisons in Illinois. I asked him how he stayed sane. And he quite candidly said, "I didn't." So even the fact that the wrongful conviction happened ends up being a life sentence for some people. And again, you don't see it through that lens. You don't understand until you humanize these stories and you have an emotional connection to these individuals.
I think that's right. And it's why, and I'm so humbled by the fact that we've been credited at the Wrongful Conviction Podcast with helping to free about 25 people so far, where the individuals, the wrongful conviction people themselves, and or their attorneys have said that our podcast, you know, had shined a light on, you know, a very necessary light in an otherwise extremely dark place. Like, these people are just invisible. They're just out there in prison somewhere in America, like, begging to be heard. And sometimes when you bring attention, you know, recently, Leo Schofield came home as a at least in part as a result of the brilliant reporting of Gilbert King on our show and Kelsey Decker on our show Bone Valley. And if we can raise the level of empathy, and I think we have, you know, I sleep well knowing that somewhere in America today, in a jury room, there are people who are, you know, serving as jurors, you know, nobly so, on a criminal trial, who are listeners of our podcast or your podcast, right? Or one of your podcasts. And they are much more likely than their fellow jurors to have a healthy dose of skepticism and to have a more educated outlook that will allow them to adhere to the principles that are supposed to be bedrock, right? Which are innocent until proven guilty and beyond a reasonable doubt. Those things are effectively out the window, and we prove it week after week on all these shows.
But that comes back to something you and I have been talking about for years, and it's the concept of creating content that actually moves people and moves them in the direction of wanting to make a difference. That audio activism, for lack of a better way of explaining it, but even from the guest episodes that I did for you on Wrongful Conviction, I've received DMs of people saying, how can I help? What can I do? Who should I write? And that is incredible to have people's minds opened by what's going through their ears to the point where they want to make a difference.
It gives me unbridled joy when I'm approached, which happens time to time, by someone who says, you know, I was working at a regular job and was listening to your podcast on my drive to work every day and my drive home. And now I'm in law school. I'm going to become a criminal defense lawyer. Or I had somebody who told me now I'm working at the Idaho Innocence Project, you know, or they find other ways to become activated, right? And so we need, you know, we need regular people, students, you know, people from all walks of life to get involved. And especially in cases, and everyone who's listening is a potential jury member someday, right? Bear in mind, the smaller the community and the larger the case, right? The you know, the more publicized the case is, the more likely it is that there's going to be downward pressure on those people, those government actors, whatever you want to call them,
to get it done.
To get it done. Yep. And so you got to go in there and remember that that person who's sitting in that defendant's chair has you know, again, those basic rights, innocent until proven guilty and must be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And also that person is somebody's mom or brother or son or daughter, whatever they might be. And they are just like you.
I do have tremendous hope for the future, and I have tremendous respect for the people who are fighting the good fight, but also fighting for their loved ones. And that's what I really hope to highlight in this season.
You know, we're over 450 episodes into Wrongful Conviction, and some of the episodes that, you know, actually knocked me out of my chair are the ones that feature heroes who are not the attorneys themselves, who deserve all the credit that they, you know, can possibly get. Not the Innocence Projects, who, again, do incredible, tireless work for not a lot of money on behalf of their clients, but the family members of people, loved ones, who have stood strong and, you know, never let up in the face of incredible hardships and overwhelming odds, and can never forget the Chris Tapp case, where the mother of the victim, Carol Dodge, she was so driven to free this man who she learned. She thought he was guilty. She wanted him to rot in hell or burn in hell. But she learned, she studied the case, and she learned that he was innocent. And she wanted justice for him and for her daughter. And so she was, she was so, like, she was such an ever, like, she, let me just say this. She went to the police station almost every day demanding that they look into this case to the point that they put in a new door. They called it the Carol door, I think they called it, to, just to keep, because she was not going to stop until they did their damn jobs.
But how heroic, honestly, that is the definition of a hero to me. And I think that it's the people who are showing up and demanding that the right thing be done. In her case, for somebody who isn't even a family member, somebody who was wrongfully convicted of killing her family member, that's just incredible. But, you know, time and time again, these are the unsung heroes. These are the people who actually make it possible for the person to not only physically get out of prison after having been wrongfully convicted, but to get through the ordeal of spending the time in prison. I spoke to Betty Benitez, whose son, Frank, was wrongfully convicted and spent, I believe, 3 decades nearly in prison. She said that he would call her and, as he put it, just say, "I can't do this anymore." And she would say, "If you say that, I'm going to come and knock sense into you." In other words, she wouldn't take no for an answer. She wouldn't let him give up. And he credits her for the fact that he's here today, that he survived it, and she's his hero.
You know, Lauren, these are unlikely heroes, and they're they're heroes who never wanted to be heroes, but they stepped up. They turned their misery into movement, right? And I'm so glad that we're highlighting them, because this series of heroes inside of this very dark world of wrongful convictions, it might just fuck around and give me hope, you know?
It's certainly done that for me, and I can't wait to share these stories. The podcast is going to come out. Do we call it drop? What is the lingo?
Yeah.
On the 27th of May, and I am just so honored to be a part of it and so amazed by the stories that I get to tell on this. So thank you so much for giving me this opportunity, and hopefully we can change minds and, as cheesy as it sounds, open hearts so that people are motivated to make a difference, because we all can.
10 episodes of Wrongful Conviction with Lauren Bright Pacheco and some of our heroes in the Wrongful Conviction feed.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, It gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're going to love season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.